We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Election Night Coverage 2024 on American Family Radio. AFA President Tim Wildman, Vice President Ed Vitagliano, News Director Fred Jackson.
Wesley will be here. Walker will be here.
And the American Family News team bring you election returns and analysis from a Christian perspective.
We'll be up here for 5 or 6 hours.
Yes.
Yeah. On Election Night beginning at 6 Central, it's Election Night Coverage 2024 on American Family Radio. Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Thursday, October 31st, and you know what that means. Happy Reformation Day. This is a Protestant Christian holiday, of course, that we remember and celebrate the onset of the Reformation and the day that Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses on the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg. And this was to promote good theology and say we need to look not just at history and tradition, but actually in Scripture and in the Word of God. And Reformation Day, of course, sparked a lot of new religious freedom and so much more that Christians celebrate. And there's actually a really good movie that's called Luther. Joseph Fiennes is the actor in it. And I think the rating is PG-13. I'd have to go back and look, but it's a little bit more obviously like adult content, but just in terms of the subject matter of his life and, you know, some of the things that Martin Luther went through. But I would personally say it's family friendly as well, but it's a really good movie that my family watches every year on Reformation Day about the life of Martin Luther and the history of what actually happened. So happy Reformation Day. And it's also All Hallows Eve, which means for me personally that it is the eve before All Saints Day, which is my birthday tomorrow. So turning 40, I was just telling Devin before the show, this is the first year I actually feel like an adult. And I think that's probably a good thing in some ways, but you know, you got to stay a kid at heart as well. But going into a brand new decade as of tomorrow. And that's actually very exciting as well, because God has moved me into some wonderful new things. And it's always good to kind of, you know, take stock of where you are at in terms of your Christian walk and your life and faith. And every year for my birthday, I tend to look back over the last year. And I think now I'm looking over the past decade and just seeing all of the things that the Lord has brought me through, things that I've been able to do as well for Him, places that I've been in, ways that I've gotten to serve Him in ministry. And it's really an amazing time to move forward with the AFR family. And I just so appreciate being here at AFA and continuing to do the work of the Lord and get to wake up each and every morning during the week with all of you and talk about the news of the day, because things are not going to stop after November 5th. I mean, of course, there is a very, very critically important election next week, but our work isn't going to stop there regardless of who wins the top of the ticket, how ballot initiatives go or not. And we can hope and we can pray that we as Christians will engage in our civic responsibility, get out and vote. If you have not yet voted, encourage your friends and family to get out and vote our values. And so, of course, you know, as we are sitting here a few days before the election, we're kind of looking at what the forecasts are, where are the polls headed. And of course, everyone wants to know what is going to happen on Tuesday. And one of the interesting prediction forecasts that I've been watching, mainly because of Elon Musk and some of the social media, because I don't tend to put a ton of stock in polls. We know that those can be manipulated, how wrong they were in 2016 and, you know, a lot even in 2020. And yet this new kind of phenomenon called Poly Market is a money betting market. And you can download the free app, and I've actually posted about it for a few days on my social media. And so it's an app that actually has in-depth on the swing states and actually where people are putting their money, and it's a money market. And so according to Elon and, you know, a few other people, this is a better indication, perhaps, of where the trends are, because this has real dollars behind it. It's not just a funded poll that you can manipulate the questions or the focus groups or, you know, the people that you poll. And the point of spending the money on the poll is to provide a specific outcome. So is Poly Market, though, actually more reliable in terms of an indication of, you know, maybe kind of, you know, reading and speculating what's going on over the next few days? So joining me now is our good friend Tho Bishop from the Mises Institute. And Tho, this has become a really fascinating topic. So what do you think about Poly Markets?
Well, first of all, happy early birthday. Hope it's a great
Thank
one tomorrow.
You.
Poly Market is the latest in a line of, there's been a growing market of these prediction markets out for several years now. There's a site called Predict-It. Which has been active for several years, a little smaller now than it used to be. I think Poly Market side kind of taking the market share there. And I think one of the advantages is, as you mentioned, it's people with actual skin in the game. The incentives are different than polling. But, of course, it's worth recognizing that, you know, the way that the best see these sort of prediction markets is they allow for kind of greater context than kind of a single poll. So similar to the way that, say, like Real Clear Politics does polling averages, and they'll add in historical trends. You can see, you know, where was Trump at this time 4 years ago, 8 years ago, and you kind of use that to kind of figure out some of the usefulness for some of those single surveys. Poly Market brings all of that information in with, you know, individual bettors, individual investors being able to factor in things that you're not going to get from a single survey. And so it makes it a very, very interesting tool. And then, of course, you know, looking at right now, I mean, you know, I think Trump right now has a 63% advantage, or, you know, 63 cents on the dollar versus Kamala's numbers. And, of course, you know, it'd be a lot. One thing, if those markets were showing something very, very different than the polling, I think that's where things get very interesting. But as it stands right now, it's part of, I think, a general trend of people seeing a number of data, both polling trends, bettors willing to put their money on the line, and kind of the underlying assumptions about voter turnout, early voting turnout, and things like that, that is kind of helping create this broader narrative. And Poly Market is just one of those areas that makes it a very convenient to kind of take into account all these different data points and consolidates it down to a convenient number, which I think is always one of the great appeals of something like that. Is it makes it very, very simple to take into account all the multitudes of data points that people look at when we're considering likely outcomes for an election.
Yeah, and one of the things that, I mean, I find it very user-friendly. I mean, kind of to go into this app and just see, you know, where the you know, they have an election countdown, and then they just say, you know, okay, here's nationally. I mean, right now, as I'm looking at the app, they're saying that Trump is at a 65.6% likelihood to win. Harris is at 34.4. And then they give you the electoral map presidential forecast. And then you can go and see kind of some of those trend lines, the swing states. And then, you know, looking at the popular vote, of course, this is why the Democrats want to get rid of the Electoral College, because Harris is at a 62% likelihood to win the Electoral College. But all of this is, you know, it's always fascinating data, and it is just predictive. I mean, nobody can tell for sure the future, but a lot of the rationale, though, that, you know, people are saying, well, because this is real money, and people aren't just using this for a journalistic sort of manipulation of an outcome, then this is perhaps more reliable, at least what people are thinking. But then on the other hand, some people are saying, well, because this isn't exclusively limited to people in the United States, this has, you know, where it's not just registered voters or even likely voters. This can be people who can, you know, put into this market from all over the world, then that has its own form of manipulation. So what would you say to, you know, to sort of those pro and con arguments?
Well, I think there's, you know, we've seen in a variety of, you know, different financial markets, right? You know, the ability for certain levels of manipulation. You have pump and dump schemes for crypto that arise from time to time and things like that. But the advantage of something like this is that, you know, if you are someone who, you know, let's say that you're someone who looks at the data, you have a very strong opinion that Kamala is doing a lot better than the polling would indicate, doing a lot better than the trends would indicate, then it gives you the ability to profit off of, you know, if there is money flooding in to try to manipulate the narrative on the other side of the bet, then others, you know, who think they have a better sense of what is going to happen, has the ability to profit from that. And so, you know, short-term little blips that, you know, might be someone trying to justify narrative can be dealt with rather quickly because there's ability to make money off the line. And one economist who's done stuff like this, often with kind of one-on-one bets with economists and things like that, is an economist from George Mason named Brian Kaplan. And, you know, he kind of recognized that, you know, it's always easy to kind of throw out hot takes. And of course, scholars are not immune from that tendency as much as any random person on X or social media. And so he would start going out and saying, okay, well, if you expect, you know, outcome X to happen and I don't, well, then let's put a bet on it. Because kind of having that skin in the game, and that's really what it comes down to, is having real skin in the game at an individual level, not an institutional level, you know, really kind of makes you put your money where your mouth is. And so for those people that are convinced of you know, certain flooding here and there, I go outside speculators, whatever. Well, for one, the nice thing is that this aligns incentives where, again, you don't have to particularly be a Donald Trump fan to put money on Donald Trump if you think that's where the data is, or the other side of it. And so, again, the fact that you actually have skin in the game, that there is an actual profit and loss aspect into this, I think makes it far less manipulable in kind of that narrative building way. Because again, if someone's, you know, out there wanting to, you know, flood the market with $100 million in bets on something they don't think is going to happen, well then, you know, that provides opportunities for other folks to take advantage of it and get on the other side of it. So you know, maybe in the short term, you know, as we've seen in all sorts of markets, you can have short term inefficiencies. You can have short term, you know, blips on the radar. But ultimately, there's going to be real outcomes. And so, again, if someone actually believes that rather than simply dismissing it, they can actually profit off of it if they, you know, if they're willing to put their own skin in the game on the other side of it.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And, you know, I mean, it's maybe a little bit comparable to sports betting in some ways. And, you know, politics is I guess, our sport. And, you know, and this is why, you know, Devin always has to tell me what's going on in the actual sports world. And I usually get the sports update from him before the show. And then we turn to the actual sport, which is politics. But then I know he's laughing in the studio at me right now, and that's okay. But you know, but as we're actually looking at, you know, some of these polls, it's interesting to me, though, Bishop, my special guest this morning, that, you know, we have this this 64%, and it was up as high as 67% even just a couple days ago, likelihood that Trump would win the Electoral College math. And yet other polls are showing this as such a tight race that even some people I'm hearing from and other sources are saying that the race is going to be too close to call even on election night. So, you know, so with all of the data points just in the last minute we have, I mean, you know, what is the best prediction in your mind for how we can take all of the data points, synthesize? I mean, I honestly have no idea right now where the election is going to go, because the data just seems so widely different depending on the source that you look at.
Well, I think one of the interesting things about this is that I think the betting market, I think poly market, it really aligns well with what the polling is right now, where if you look at kind of the state-by-state dynamic, you know, the state that has, you know, of all the swing states, particularly the Rust Belt states, it has Pennsylvania with a 20% advantage for Trump. And I think that's kind of showed out in the polling, where Pennsylvania, of all the Rust Belt states, is polling the best for Trump. And so ultimately, both of those outcomes The poly market outcome is baked on a similar assumption that polls are indicating. And I think one of the most interesting aspects of poly market is if you look at some of the state-by-state markets that have a lot less action, have a lot less bets on it. And I think those are where, if it's going to be a surprise, it's going to be similar to certain states that aren't having as much polling as, you say, in Pennsylvania. What are the markets in poly market that are having less financial activity than some of the others? So I think a state like New Hampshire is very interesting, where it has a I think it's like an 80-20 Kamala win. There's not a whole lot of polling out there. There's a few polls lately that have shown some growing strength for Trump there. And so if there's going to be a surprise outcome, a market like that just hasn't had a lot of betting going on, that might be a state that flips, and that would change the entire map very, very quickly to a more stronger Trump position there. So I think like poly market shows, that there's a lot of positive trends.
Yeah, well, we'll have to keep watching all of the trends. Really fascinating. Tho Bishop, thanks so much for your insights. You can follow him on X at Tho Bishop. We'll be right back with more. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as the two presidential candidates are making their closing arguments for the 2024 election, I mean, we are just days away. Can you believe that it's actually finally here? I am so excited to be post 2024 election. It's just been so interesting, fascinating, and of course divisive, but the worldview differences between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris is what I've primarily been focusing on, because really that's what we are voting for, of course, as Christians, and engaging in selecting those who are in power in government office and who we designate and select and prefer as our leaders. And there was a really fascinating piece in the Daily Wire yesterday, and the headline is this: How Trump Learned to Embrace the Transgender Culture Wars, from transgender athletes to parental uprisings. Here's how the former president came around on the 2024 sleeper issue. And this is by Mary Margaret Olihan, and she joins us now. So Mary Margaret, thanks so much for joining this morning. And this has been, I think, even since 2020, and especially during the midterms in 2022, with everything going on in Virginia, and I think that was why Glenn Youngkin was elected governor there. With everything going on in the school boards, we've seen all of the LGBTQ stuff in curriculum, in elementary and high schools. I mean, all the way to all of the transgender surgery nonsense. I mean, there's been so much more attention on this issue. But it's been really interesting to see how Donald Trump has approached this.
Yeah. Good morning, Jenna. And it really has been interesting to see how Trump has approached this. In 2020, no one in the GOP was really talking about transgender messaging. On the left, we've always seen an understanding of where this issue is heading and a very heavy focus on pushing these types of topics. But on the right, for a while, there was this fear, and this is what I'm told when I spoke to more than a dozen Trump operatives and activists who've been close to the situation. There's been this fear of being associated with being anti-gay or homophobic, when in the actuality of what we were talking about, none of these issues should have been able to be pigeonholed in such a way at all. And as 2020 progressed, we began to see more and more parents understanding the realities of what was going on in their kids' classrooms, exposed by the coronavirus pandemic. And then we began to see more and more parents speak up. And the people I spoke to identified maybe three watershed moments. The first one was the Loudoun County scandal when Luke Rosiak, one of our Daily Wire writers, exposed that Loudoun County school system was covering up the sexual assault of a young girl by a skirt-wearing boy while they were pushing a transgender bathroom policy. And that absolutely contributed to the parental uprising in Loudoun County and all over the country, which led to Glenn Youngkin's victory in Virginia because he listened to parents. And Trump paid attention to this. His staff paid attention to this. They also paid close attention to the way that parents rose up, how they went to conservative media like myself or my friends at the Daily Caller, Daily Wire, you name it. And these stories really contributed to the GOP and Trump being able to see, okay, this is going on. These things are happening. It's not just hearsay. And then, of course, the rise of Riley Gaines, a girl who was forced to compete against a male athlete, Leah or Will Thomas. And all of these events helped the Trump campaign to understand that this is something really close to the hearts of Americans. This is something that the American people aren't just, you know, viewing as something interesting to talk about on the sidelines of the soccer field. This is something that they will vote on. And, of course, I'm told by some of the sources close to the Trump campaign that these types of messages have been validated in internal Trump polling. And so one person told me that Tony Fabrizio, who's Trump's pollster, would never have put money behind these messages if they weren't backed up in polling. So he's saying that is the case. You know, the Trump campaign is seeing that these are effective, and that's part of the reason they're leaning into them. And so, you know, Jenna, I could rant for hours, but this is what I'm told is this is the 2024 sleeper issue, the trans issue, and that a lot more people are going to come out to vote for this. Specifically, women are going to come out to vote on this topic, and we're going to be surprised.
And I think that's all really fascinating, Mary Margaret, especially because traditionally it seemed like the Democrats focused so much on the social issues that they believe bolster their campaign and turn out their voting base. Things, you know, like abortion, for example, things like gay marriage, you know, some of those. But that they have traditionally couched in a way that they think advantages them. And Republicans have been more focused on more of the fiscal policy, the economy, you know, things that are a little bit more away from the social issues. But I think this trend that you're describing is absolutely correct, that so many of the conservatives and especially Christians are voting on these issues, and they do see these as a very top priority. I mean, when you have headlines like the women's sports issue, when you have a now sitting a Supreme Court justice that can't even describe what a woman is. I mean, it's like we're not even living in reality when you look at the differences between the two parties and really the two campaigns. And then there was another headline from the New York Post just a couple of weeks ago that was saying a woke doctor refused to publish a $10 million trans study that showed puberty blockers didn't help mental health. I don't know if you saw this, but I mean, to say that this was funded back in 2017 and that taxpayers paid for this. And then this doctor didn't get the results that she wanted. And so she didn't want to publish the information that actually showed how this new rise of an entirely new patient and consumer base of children was actually harmful to them rather than helpful. I mean, these are things that parents care about. These are things that any rational voter would care about.
Yes, they absolutely are. And I think Trump has done a really good job in his phrasing on this topic. He'll say things like, this is just crazy, or can you believe this craziness? And when he's really tapping into the sentiment that most people are feeling when they think about this topic, like, it is crazy. It doesn't make any sense why a doctor would not show us the real results of studies and research in order to protect kids. I think you could also say it is evil to not show the results of science when you know that they are leading a certain way. And of course, You know, I've done a lot of research and writing on the gender issue, and I would say that that attitude in the gender ideology space is far too common. They don't want science. They don't want to follow the science. They want the science to match their ideology. And so when it comes to pro-trans researchers, for example, they would say that even if puberty blockers are wrecking the bone density of kids, the benefits outweigh the harms, you know, and their benefits, what they would say is the idea, their fake claim that a kid will commit suicide if he can't get puberty blockers, they'll say, okay, well, the fact that he's not going to commit suicide because he's getting gender-affirming care outweighs the dangers of bone density, which is just absurd, and it doesn't make any sense. And it's just all based on feelings and guesses and ideology, frankly. So I think, you know, the story you mentioned is so wild. I don't know if that permeates to most people. It might be one of those ones that the people who are already in really heavily in politics in the gender space are paying really close attention to. But I do know that they're seeing things like the messaging from Riley Gaines, who's becoming almost a household name at this point, or they're seeing the craziness that of Chloe Cole's story, a young woman who underwent a double mastectomy as a minor because she was told it would make her happier if she could become a boy. And they're seeing this type of thing on social media. They're seeing it on all their social media platforms, especially X, thanks to Elon Musk, where, you know, a lot of these people were getting banned and deplatformed for even saying biological realities. But it's gotten through. These types of stories have gotten through, and I would say in a large part thanks to conservative news and conservative commentators who refused to shut up even when it was considered anti-trans to speak the truth on this.
Yeah, and you have been one of those voices, and I commend your work. And I'm speaking with Mary Margaret Olihan from the Daily Wire, and her book that you should read is called D-Trans, True Stories of Escaping the Gender Ideology Cult. And this was published just back in May. And so, I mean, even this work and just what you've personally done to highlight the stories and the truth about the entire evil trans movement is so important. And I think you're right to say that this is an issue that is at the fore. And going back to your piece on Trump specifically, it's been fascinating to me. You know, of course, I worked for him in the 2020 campaign. And of course, before that, leading up to the campaign. And, you know, he had the Pride Coalition and was a little bit more just kind of hands off on all that and just saying, well, you know, the party needs to be a bigger tent and a wider tent. And we welcome everybody and whatever. But I think he's actually done a really good job of separating what he sees as maybe the choices that adults can make in some of their decision-making capacity versus what's going on with children, and especially also what's going on in the trans movement, women's sports, some things like that he's rightly described as crazy. And so to me, that has been a fascinating shift, and to see him lean into that, and I think he really does believe that. I don't think that he's out there, you know, saying that just as a talking point, but it's been really interesting to see that just in 4 years, how the left has made that so extreme. Or maybe is it just that we're now discovering what they've and highlighting what they've been doing all along for the last, you know, decade plus?
Exactly. And I think that, you know, many of us would argue that if you look at the roots of gender ideology, trying to transition a person is just A, not possible, and B, really bad for them, for their mental health, for their body physically. So, you know, I would argue that this isn't good for anyone. But I think the messaging that you're seeing from Trump and the GOP right now is that as an adult, you do have the ability to make decisions for yourself, whatever. But when it comes to our kids, you don't mess with our kids. And I find that really interesting because I was there at the rally the night before Youngkin won Virginia, and that's what he was telling the crowd. He was saying, don't mess with our kids. And I get chills just saying that because that's the message that parents care about so much. And the rally that I went to the night before Youngkin won, it was all parents. All parents so excited, so revved up, so excited to vote Youngkin into office. And I think that messaging is really permeating this election. You know, when Trump speaks on stage, he'll say like I said before, that's crazy. Can you believe it? But he specifically said, I believe in 2023 in Iowa, he said, can you imagine someone saying that several years ago? No one would have imagined that 10 years ago. And he's right. No one could have imagined this becoming such a major issue. But these leftist ideologues, they push too far. And they came for the kids. And unfortunately for them, they really exposed what their agenda is. And now the whole country knows it.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right that parents are standing up and that this issue is permeating the election, and not just on the presidential level. I mean, what we're seeing here in the state of Florida, of course, with Amendments 3 and 4, I mean, one of the biggest pushbacks that Governor DeSantis and the First Lady have said over the last month, but especially over the last few weeks as early voting has started, is for parents to stand up. And Amendment 4, of course, in abortion regulation, in this extreme amendment that would allow abortion until the moment of birth, to say no, that we need to protect our kids. And then Amendment 3, legalizing recreational marijuana, it's like, no, we need to protect our kids in public spaces and to make sure that they're not getting a hold of some of these way more easily accessible and candy-like looking edibles and, you know, all of these things. And the message is very clear that parents need to come out and vote for the security and safety of the community, and mainly to protect kids. And so I see that message being threaded very well from the governor here in Florida as well.
Yes, definitely. I think that they're really threading the needle on that as well. And, you know, when it comes to Amendment 4, I'm a reporter that covers culture issues, and I find this one so insidious because I see how state after state these abortion activists have gotten this across the finish line. So I just wrote a story a couple days ago on the governor and his team's efforts to defeat this. It's fascinating what's going on in Florida, but it's a big deal, too. I think people don't understand. They hear abortion amendment and think, like, oh, that sounds trivial, or it sounds like something I'm not involved in. No, this is a big deal. And I think DeSantis himself has said that it would make Florida the abortion mecca of the South. You know, it would enable all of these people from different states to come to Florida to get abortions because they can't get them in the surrounding ones. And abortion activists are very aware of that, too. So when I look at this situation, it not to be dramatic, Jenna, but it reminds me of when in Lord of the Rings, the forces are circling Gondor. And that's my niece little Lord of the Rings reference. But this is major groups, ACLU, Planned Parenthood, dark money groups from D.C., they're all focused on Florida right now, trying to infiltrate and to supersede their pro-life laws and to effectually allow abortions up until birth. And that is obviously not what Floridians want, considering the laws they already have. So I've written a lot about this. I think people should pay very close attention.
Yeah, well, I think you won a lot of new fans if they didn't already know who you were, Mary Margaret, with dropping the Lord of the Rings reference. That's always welcome at AFR to have, you know, a fellow Tolkien fan. You know, we love Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, but you're absolutely right. And I think that the targeting of Florida specifically, I mean, there are 9 other states that have extreme abortion measures as well. And, you know, of course, at AFA Action, we're encouraging everyone in those states get out and vote no on those extreme amendments. But for Florida specifically, I think that the left is targeting this state because if Florida becomes a cottage industry for abortions and legalizing recreational marijuana and without any guardrails on public spaces, they're purposefully trying to say very clearly to the supermajority of the Republican-led Florida state legislature and America's governor, you know, DeSantis, who has been one of the best examples of what a governor can do, to say, well, we're just going to circumvent everything that you are doing for the state. And if we spend enough outside money, whether it's corporate interests, it's Soros, it's Planned Parenthood, whoever, we can come in and do whatever we want to your state. And there's nothing you can do about it because we'll just go and basically lie to the voters with these summaries and not tell them the truth about the harmful impacts of these amendments and that it's so difficult to roll it back once it's cemented into the Constitution. And that's where they're signaling to conservatives conservatives and especially the pro-life movement to parents that they can come in and spend whatever kind of money they want in the states and say, you know, we can do whatever we want. So this whole movement, I think, is it's encouraging to see that, you know, Governor DeSantis and President Trump are on the same team fighting against a lot of this. And I'm grateful that President Trump has come out against Amendment 4 as well. And it's so important that we understand how all of these issues work together, because I think, Mary Margaret, fundamentally from the left, this is coming from the same worldview and the same ideology that they can reinvent reality into their version of this sort of trans utopia.
Absolutely. And I think that these groups are very aware. They have an agenda. They're pushing a very specific ideology, whether it's abortion or trans issues. But something that I think people don't bring it up enough is that Planned Parenthood is the second largest hormone distributor in the country. And so when we're talking about Florida's Amendment 4 or any of these abortion amendments in different states, we're not just talking about abortion, as you just said. We're talking about laws that are going to supersede a parent's right to know whether their daughter is getting an abortion. But we're also talking about funding the nation's second largest hormone distributor. So Amendment 4, for example, is going to be giving, like, funneling money into Planned Parenthood, which in turn is going to be distributing massive amounts of estrogen and testosterone to anyone that's coming in asking for hormone prescriptions because they think they're not actually a girl or not actually a guy. So that's really important to notice. But to your point about these groups coming from out of state, absolutely, these are groups that are organized. They are very planned. I think we have ballot amendments on abortion in maybe 12 different states right now, and most of them are going to succeed very likely because these pro-life groups are outspent very heavily.
Well, this is where we need to fight back as Christians. We need to get out and vote. The Barna survey that said about 32 million may sit home. Don't be one of those Christians that stays at home. Get out, vote your values, and also get Mary Margaret Olihan's book, D-Trans, True Stories of Escaping the Gender Ideology Cult. We'll be right back with more.
This election is critical, especially for the lives of the unborn. Select states have abortion on the ballot. They're more interested in protecting abortion instead of the innocent unborn children who can't speak for themselves. Maybe you know your state is one of the guilty ones, but if you're not sure, please find out before you vote. We have a list of states and the measures they're trying to pass. Visit afaaction.net/life to keep our preborn babies safe in the womb. afaaction.net/life. Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as we are just days away from the 2024 election, there are already reports of various problems with voting security going on. And this coming from trendingpoliticsnews.com. New Colorado Secretary of State is under fire after posting passwords for voting machines. So on Tuesday, this according to the report, an online spreadsheet inadvertently was posted by the Colorado Secretary of State's office. The spreadsheet contained a tab with BIOS passwords critical to the security setup of the state's voting machines. The discovery was announced in an email from the vice chair of the Colorado Republican Party, which explains that the passwords were found by an unnamed individual who accessed the spreadsheet and used the quote-unquote unhide function in Excel. The person's identity was concealed in the affidavit circulated by the party. Of course, the Colorado Secretary of State has said in a very fiery interview with 9 News Denver that you can, I reposted that on my X account, and you can, of course, watch that wherever you can access that interview. She was asked directly by the reporter, who is, no friend to the Republican Party in Colorado, if she would resign over this. And she said no. But the Colorado Republican Party is calling for her resignation. And former State Representative Dave Williams, who is the chairman of the Colorado GOP, joins me now. So, Dave, what's going on in Colorado? And good morning.
Good morning. Nothing good. I mean, I hope this dispels the myth that we have the, quote, gold standard of election processes and systems in Colorado. She should resign. This is disgraceful. And And I want to point out the hypocrisy and double standard here, because there was another sort of infamous Colorado politician by the name of Tina Peters that she went after viciously over a similar incident. But, you know, the difference here is Tina was accused and convicted of publishing sensitive information out of one county, Mesa County. And here, Jenna Griswold is definitely guilty through her own admission of having published 63 different counties, over 600 passwords with respect to, you know, thousands of voting machines. This is certainly something that she needs to be held accountable for and potentially even prosecuted for, because that was the same standard she applied to Tina. It's disgraceful, and it certainly does threaten our, you know, our elections, and puts into question potentially many of these results that are going to be close on Tuesday.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right to make that comparison, Dave Williams, because it was only, you know, earlier this month or late last month, I mean, you know, just a few weeks ago, that that Tina Peters was sentenced to close to a decade in prison for her actions in giving some of these passwords away from for her position as a county clerk. And yet we see that the Secretary of State's office, and they're saying inadvertently, but, you know, however it happened, the passwords were on and accessible to people outside of their office. And so it's absolutely wild to me that the Secretary of State is not stepping down over this. And of course, there is a party difference, right? The Secretary of State currently is a Democrat. Tina Peters is a Republican. So if we see that there isn't the same treatment, what does that indicate to you as far as potentially the hypocrisy here in, you know, where it should be a nonpartisan issue to say that election integrity matters?
Oh, I think it's at least one of two things. You know, one thing is that what Tina did and what the secretary accused Tina of doing really wasn't that big of a deal, number one, or it is a big deal, and she just doesn't want to face the music. She doesn't want to be held accountable. In either event, there's really a miscarriage of justice going on here, and we should not stand for it, and we should be demanding the Attorney General, Phil Weiser, who's also a Democrat, to do his job and prosecute and hold her to the same standard, or the Denver District Attorney, who would have jurisdiction over Secretary Griswold to do the same. But she's also a Democrat, and I just don't foresee that happening unless we fight and push for it, because we shouldn't be having these two sets of rules. You know, it looks an awful lot like Democrats are more than willing to weaponize law enforcement and a judicial system against their opponents, and It smells like it's happening here. The other thing I'd point out about Jenna Griswold is that she wasn't going to disclose any of this to the county clerks or to the public. The only reason she did was because we caught her and we put it out there. And that, I think, was the most telling thing that she admitted to Kyle Clark. In my estimation, and I think a lot of people are going to agree with this, this is shaping up to be a cover-up as well. I mean, there's not only the breach, but the fact that she knew it for about 5 days before we exposed it, and she wasn't telling anyone and quietly doing what she was doing, tells me that she was trying to cover her tracks. And that's also something that we need to tackle and hold her accountable for.
So in that 5 day period, when she wasn't disclosing it, was that hidden tab still up there, and then she didn't, and her office didn't actually pull that down and tell your report?
No, I think they actually did catch it. And I discreetly did something about it, but the hidden tab, that was up for at least a couple of months. So they weren't aware of it. Then they became aware of it, discreetly took it down. We exposed them. And then we just found out yesterday that I don't think any of the passwords had been changed until we had publicly, you know, come out with it through our own efforts. So it just goes to show you that, you know, incompetence or maliciousness, whatever the case may be, she's unfit to serve, and she needs to go.
Well, and so to your knowledge, Dave Williams, and he is the chair of the Colorado GOP, my special guest this morning, is there an investigation into what exactly happened and why this tab was up there for so long?
She, you know, the secretary claims that she's doing her own internal investigation and blames it on
right.
a former member of her personnel. But, you know, we don't know, and that's sort of the problem. We're calling for the legislature. We're certainly asking, you know, prosecutors potentially to do their own independent investigation. I think even Kyle Clark alluded to that, you know, maybe should be happening. But right now, I think everyone's kind of scrambling to figure out how to handle this, especially, you know, with less than a week before a major election. You know, the troubling thing about all this is Jenna wanted those Mesa County machines to be decertified when this happened in the Tina Peters incident. So it begs the question, do we need to start decertifying all the different machines in 63 or 64 counties? I mean, the answer from her office is no. And I think it's probably a matter of inconvenience as opposed to, you know, just doing what's right. But I mean, this is such a we've never had this kind of issue before. And again, it just speaks to the need for her to resign. If she's not going to resign, at least recuse herself from overseeing any of the election systems in, you know, 5 days from now.
Yeah, and it just seems, you know, to me as somebody who's now in Florida, so, you know, I have no personal stake other than what all obviously the country does in terms of wanting election integrity in every state. You know, but it seems to me that for Colorado, you know, holding themselves up as kind of the, you know, the gold standard of election integrity, to have this kind of cloud of controversy, if there are any contested results, I mean, this just muddies the waters in terms of, you know, being able to say, hey, everything went smoothly, went accurately, went according to the law and the process. And so you would think, even if it is inconvenient, that they would want to ensure that the public has confidence in the results. And, you know, and what we're seeing from at least some of the polls and some of the sources, Dave Williams, is that Colorado may actually be trending a little bit more red than the last couple of cycles. I hope that's true in terms of conservatives getting out and voting their values. And, you know, so what do you think in terms of where Colorado as a whole is at in terms of some of those polling numbers?
Yeah, no, I think that's correct. We are going to perform better than we have in the last two cycles. It's becoming very apparent, especially as the Democrats begin to implode. You know, I think it might be a stretch for us to flip the state, but we're going to certainly do better. But, you know, stepping back and looking at the larger scheme things, I think what the danger, or at least the lesson that should be learned for at least the Trump campaign in the swing states, is look, check into this, because we stumbled upon this issue. We weren't searching for this. We came across it because there was a, you know, an interested whistleblower that discovered it late within the process. God knows that this could be happening in Pennsylvania, Arizona, Wisconsin, any of the swing states that inadvertently passwords were posted. And, you know, I don't know if you saw, there's a piece from former gubernatorial nominee Heidi Ganahl out of Colorado, where she discovered that the machines could be accessed remotely, and she proved it. And so when you combine that fact with leaked passwords that do grant you access to those machines and the ability to manipulate, it's a very scary thought. So, you know, someone needs to be looking into the swing states to make sure this didn't happen. Because it certainly happened here, and with the stakes so high, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, any of this was intentional or malicious.
Wow. Well, we'll certainly be looking at Colorado and what else is going on there in the days leading up to the election, but then also, you know, after the fact. I mean, there, according to, you know, my sources and what I'm hearing, there may not be a winner even declared on election night, which will be very interesting. But Dave Williams, always appreciate you joining, and thanks so much for your work in Colorado. We always appreciate having you on. And, you know, these types of of reports are important to cover. And, you know, of course, you know, the left has said that election integrity isn't an issue that anybody should be talking about, and they want to cancel you, do all kinds of things if you even raise some of these sorts of questions. And so I'm glad that in Colorado, the GOP is looking at this and just wanting the truth. We should always be fact finders and truth seekers, and demand that those who are the regulators ensure that the process and the law is followed. I mean, that should be a nonpartisan issue, but unfortunately, in 2024 and the age in which we live, it's become anything but a nonpartisan issue. I mean, even voter ID. It's like, I have to have an ID to do literally almost anything in this country except going out to vote. And that's absolutely ridiculous in most states, at least. And, you know, the left doesn't want to make you prove who you are. You know, why is that? I wonder. Well, anyway, if you have not gotten out and voted yet in your state, look at your ballot, be an informed voter, but most importantly, get out and vote, and also encourage your friends and family to do the same. We have to participate in this election so that we can select and prefer our leaders, we can pray for them, and we can ensure that all of these terrible ballot measures like Amendment 3 and 4 in Florida fail. And we'll be back tomorrow with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You can reach me and my team, jenna@afr.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.